Welcome to Fuel, where leaders share their journeys with you. This month's episode, we hear from two leaders whose similarities and differences create a constructive tension that results in stronger coordination, cooperation, collaboration, and communication.
Welcome. Thank you both for being here. And this is kind of a unique thing because this is the first time we've had a conversation with two people at the same time that reported, one reporting to the other. And I'd like you to introduce yourself, tell us kind of who you are, where you work, and what you do for the organization. Yeah.
Hey, good morning. My name is Mike Leidner. I am currently the Deputy Technical Director at the Naval Surface Warfare Center in Port Hueneme. That's an organization of about 2,900 civilians, some military and contractors, of which I am the second senior civilian at the command. I also have military service as an engineering duty officer, as combat systems type, including a bunch of tours at the Pentagon, the Navy Yard, program office, et cetera.
Hi, my name is John Richardson. I'm the Director of Intelligence Operations at the Naval Surface Warfare Port Hueneme Division. Mike Leidner, the Deputy Technical Director, is my supervisor. And from a military experience perspective, I come to this conversation having served 8 years as an enlisted sailor and then an additional 12 years as a commissioned officer flying helicopters and being on STRATCOM staff. So that's who I am.
What are maybe some lessons you learned from making what I would call a major transition in your leadership career? Let's start with Mike.
So, hey, Joe, thanks. I found a very different leading organizations versus leading people directly supervised, right? That supervision leadership where you are, right? It's not just about the results you're trying to achieve, but also to develop, nurture, and grow the people that work for you. That is much more important than the second job. So that 30 years of leading one way and then having to learn to lead civilians another way where, you know, it's easy to joke in the military, like we care about feelings, we care about people, we care, right? We do. We care a lot more about the mission, right? As a supervisor, I needed to learn new skills.
John, we'll go with you.
I found that when I first came on board, I was brought on board in a civilian context within the Navy to fix a relatively consequential problem. We had some things in landfills that shouldn't have been there. And so when I came on board, it was really a restructuring process. And my military leadership upbringing would have had me go as fast as I could with the ability to sacrifice manpower to throw at that problem. And I quickly realized that because this civilian leadership experience is much more of a marathon than a sprint, and that I was not going to be getting a replacement of people every 36 months like I would have if I was wearing the uniform, I really had to retool myself and find a new set of tools to be able to orchestrate the get well plan without breaking people. And so wow. I felt like I could go very fast if people were expendable. But that's really not the approach, right? I was quickly retooled by my people, by my supervisors to really focus on getting the mission accomplished while preserving, engaging, equipping, and empowering my workforce.
So I ironically, even though I've been John's supervisor for a couple of the last 5 years in two different roles, I feel like I learned a lot of civilian personnel management from him, right? So even though I feel like I have my training wheels on and John is my test case, right, where I get to learn, observe, and model behaviors from him. So I feel much more that I am, even though I am providing expectations and direction and guidance, I'm getting way more into that relationship where he's had a bit of a head start with me on leading civilians. And certainly his experience with all the leadership training that you both are part of. I think I benefit from that experience and that viewpoint that I did not have until recently.
So John, you know, one of the things that we talk about often is a balance between authority and humility. What do you think of the humility that you just heard from your supervisor?
To be honest, Joe, it's really what keeps me engaged It really keeps me engaged on a day-to-day basis that I can have meaningful conversations with such a transparent and humble supervisor. Mike has modeled those things every single time that we are involved in a consequential decision or a meaningful effort at work. We really see each other as mutually beneficial parts of the solution. When we have conflict, all of that trust and transparency really supports our ability to have conflict in a healthy way. And I'm really a big fan of the thought that if you're not having conflict, you're not pushing hard enough. And so I'm able to push harder and take more risks because of that level of transparency and humility that Mike just demonstrated. So it really creates a space for me to serve him in a more robust and meaningful way.
I was wondering if you have a preferred leadership style, and could you describe that style, maybe how that impacts your entire team?
Yeah, there's a leadership style I feel comfortable in, and there's a leadership style sometimes I play on TV, right? So I certainly enjoy three things: strategic critical thinking, getting things done, and having fun. So that is where I like to live. That's where I like to, establishing those four C's, right? That coordination, cooperation, collaboration, communication, right? How do I share a vision with a team of high-performing individuals and incentivize them to figure out their parts of that stream and to go, and right? And then we all go do that together to serve at a command or higher level, right? That's my preferred leadership style. However, it also depends on this person, right? Sometimes I feel like I can do that. Certainly with John, I feel like that's a two-way street where we can challenge each other. Sometimes I'm glad I'm on the supervisor end of that relationship, right? Where I could say no, right? Other times I'm with a super where I feel like it's very, thank you for your input. This is what we're doing. And it's very much more directional.
John, if I hadn't even asked Mike that, I think you would have been able to answer that the follow-on question for you, which is, how has Mike's leadership style influenced your approach to both collaboration and teamwork as you lead from a command level?
Well, if I had somebody to be a partner in all of this with me, I couldn't pick a person that is more complementary to my approach to leadership. I think Mike has taught me how to be a better program manager. He comes with exquisite bona fides associated with program management within the Big A acquisition context. I have a tendency to make big decisions with an imperfect amount of information. And I have found myself wondering what questions my leader is going to be asking me, what perspectives need to be addressed as I weigh in and make different decisions within my area of influence. And so Mike's leadership style, generally speaking, is one that seeks to identify risk, to mitigate risk, to try and make sense of disparate perspectives and put them together in one place to try and reduce or be reductive in the way he approaches so that he can relate to the front office. His experience testifying in front of Congress as a major program manager makes him desire a very wide array of information so he can distill that down into what the appropriate decisions might be for those very, very senior level people. And that perspective has really transformed the way that I approach what I do on a day-to-day basis.
So just pulling that string a little bit more, I hear some differences in the way that Mike approaches leadership and the way that you approach leadership. So having him as a supervisor, how has that changed how you're leading your people? What are the good things that you've taken from him to then apply, maybe that you wouldn't have if you hadn't had Mike as your supervisor?
I would say rigor. To be honest, I approach things as a greasy helicopter pilot in most ways, right? If you're thinking about stuff too much, then the machine can sneak up and kill you. Realistically, that's not the case. When I walk into work every day, the likelihood that I'm going to be coming home from an event that I have at work is extremely high. So I have the luxury of slowing down and thinking about things and applying a risk matrix and understanding what the financial impacts might be, how other organizations' perspectives may need to be considered so that I am not like a bull in the china shop, just charging forward. So I would say that's, that's what comes to mind when you ask that follow-up, Joe.
Thanks, John. I can imagine that, you know, being someone who's leading folks who have been around the block and have developed in their career, it might be difficult sometimes, Mike, to develop skill sets, to foster development, if you will. So what are the things that you take to cultivate skills and potential in your subordinates? Do you tailor it to each of the individuals? And maybe the follow-on to that is how does that look with John?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. You know, it could look like all the traditional things we go do, right? Set PEM objective, be the example, all those kinds of things. Set department manager expectations. I have found that developmental is very tailored to the person. And so what can I do to help bring that and then pass that on? Not just from a, hey, here's what we ought to go do. Here's a decision. But also, what do you think we ought to go do? How do we go solve that? John, we joke that John has more whiteboards in his office than I do. And that, right, because it's my budget. But the fact that we spend a ton of time in John's office whiteboarding command problems, right? Whether it's his problem inside his division or my problem at the command level, we have a trust and a confidence and a honesty between each other where we can go in and really stare at hard problems in a closed environment with a whiteboard and really just, right? And to me, that does a bunch of things. It helps us solve command problems. It helps us continue this relationship. It helps us develop each other as leaders, as thinkers, right? All in the service towards a command mission, but also to make ourselves better, right? Because all of those things help each other. The command does better. We become better. We become better. We help the command get better, right? And I can have all the patriarch, like hopefully you can cut in some music playing in the background, but we both strongly believe in this command mission, and right, we have an urgency, we have an opportunity, and if we also enjoy working with each other and this interaction that we, right, helps us do that, right, solve all those things, make us better, make the command better, make the Navy better, right, it makes you want to come to work in the morning, after a long career.
I am inspired. Nevertheless, I'm not sure what John needed to work on.
John, I don't know if we have enough time in this podcast. So I come from, right, as I said, right, I've had the opportunity. So I think political, I try and anticipate that 1-3-5 year. John has a background, right, is certainly where he works. And, right, he has, so I feel like I have constraints on me. Like, I feel like there's a realism and there's a budget or there's somebody who's going to tell me no. John does not feel burdened by those constraints. So his, I can do anything in mind. Well, how about we do something we can actually go, right? What do I think we can actually accomplish? That constructive tension ends up us developing, better solutions, better ways to go forward and makes us better, right? John and I from 7 years ago and John and I now, right? You would think we're a well-oiled machine as much as we like to fight in public or whatever, right? It's a wonderful thing to have that kind of relationship. After this time.
John, as you heard Mike talking, what has his support really contributed to your personal growth and professional growth? Maybe even giving you an opportunity to be a different kind of leader than maybe you had thought of before. Mm-hmm. How did you integrate that into your own team as well?
I think as I look back over each of the instances where Mike's been in my circle and provided me some constraint, I think that really identifies the role that he has played to make me better. And that is to apply discipline, rigor, and constraint to my approach. Not just only my personal approach to solving problems, but also the way that I lead. So my approach to leadership is very, very relational. And so far, the multiple decades of that relational leadership shtick that I engage in have not ever bitten me in the backside. So that's kind of dangerous, right? And so Mike has very much helped me consider a broader perspective, a wider perspective, not just on leadership, but also program management. The things that he has done for me and for my organization is really allowed me to take some risks, allowed me autonomy. He's allowed me mastery and has given me a broader purpose to be able to plug into. That produces engagement. I sense that people get sick of hearing me say that I have the best job at the command. And I earnestly believe that. And I feel that way because of the environment that Mike has been able to provide me and my organization as we move forward. We're doing consequential things. And in many ways, it's because he is bridging the gap and creating space for us to do things that are consequential.
As I hear you both talk about that, what occurs to me is that that sounds fairly ideal, but I'm suspecting that's not been the way it's always been for either of you with other people. I mean, the shtick is, oh, you know, make your boss's priorities your priorities. But what's the reality to that?
I am made from the perspective that I am constantly building things and handing them off. When I have an environment that doesn't allow me to build things, I have a tendency, like Mike's puppy, to gnaw on the furniture a little bit. So I have to be very aware of myself and my entrepreneurial bents so that I don't become toxic, because I think that if I was told no too much, if I was smacked on the nose with a newspaper too much, that I would likely either find a new place to work or I would turn inward and become toxic. And I think I see a lot of other leaders doing that in general, and I just don't ever want to become that person. So what the current environment has provided is the ability for me to build something, to be somewhat of a business development leader in the compartmented space. And that, as I reflect, is really what has become the core of my satisfaction. The value that I think I bring to the table is that freedom to try and bring in business of interest and impact to the fleet.
Yeah, Joe, I might be taking your question in another way. If I think about alignment across the command, this maybe not so much a lead, it's a command leadership perhaps question is where I'm trying to take it, right? When I got here 70 years ago, there was a lot of distrust and value that was not realized across the command, right? Between the line codes and the staff codes, between the offices that I worked in, right? That did a lot of policy and guidance. There was a lot of, why do we even need, if your office went away, we wouldn't even notice it, right? So the command, right? The leadership changed over. We had some changes in senior leadership, and some of them have started to bring a different culture, right? We started to invest in a lot more strategic thinking and coordination across the command. So helping the command leadership create a single vision and getting that buy-in reduced a lot of that. It's not my idea. This is just something I'm being told, right? We all had buy-in to go get there. And then we are investing significant amounts of time to work with each other, not just at work, but around work, right? Finding time to go to, right? To go to breakfast or go to lunch or to go have, right? Other things, right? Go do things outside of work to go build relationships. And as much as like my career has been very action officer oriented, right? Like I don't have time to be social. I've got stuff, but that investing in time, when we take time to go do strategic offsites and we spend time, right? Even the times where we're forced to go spend some time together at dinner afterwards, those times have built relationships and right personal relationships that have carried over. And that to me reduces the amount of right the leadership friction and the buy-in and the it's not I'm just doing what I'm told. All those kinds of leadership challenges we have at the command have been overcome, right? Maybe it's just because we pick some leaders that have those kinds of personalities and things that John and I have talked about. Maybe it's because we've spent time investing in each other to get to that strategic vision. But that has reduced some of the friction. We have lessons learned and things we're still doing, right? But that has made life easier because we are aligning our leadership together with one vision and reduce that friction. Doesn't mean we don't agree. There are constraints, budget and strength, all those things that we have to balance. And we have to make decisions, but that environment makes those difficult conversations easier.
So, John, hearing Mike talk about that and that specific challenge, Did you have to adapt to that approach in response to Mike's leadership during that?
Yeah, I've been on a broader journey, Joe. I think you and I have talked about it a little bit together, and that's my ability to not jump on and be the solution for every problem that's put in front of me. It's been very difficult for me. Well, I shouldn't say difficult. It's been an exercise in restraint in the midst of all of this to not jump in and attempt to seize control of this process. One, I'm probably not the person to seize control and bring people together because I have a vested interest in the outcome. But it has been a wonderful process for me to kind of sit back on the sidelines, be a part of the conversation, and just see where things go. Try and exercise that restraint slow is smooth, smooth is fast kind of idea here is that in the journey to go faster, perhaps taking a deep breath and kind of seeing everything outside of my normal tunnel vision for what it is and allowing that to emerge and evolve. It's actually an odd time for me to be doing that because in this idea of wanting to go faster, my normal bent would be to just jump in and take control. And I just sensed that was not the case, that this was not that opportunity. And so as an emerging senior leader, I'm learning to listen a little bit better. And a lot of that has to do with me engaging in a coaching journey, right? And listening more, speaking less, although those around me may not agree that they are witnessing that. But that is really the perspective that I'm trying to bring to the leadership table that I'm at as of late. And I think it's working out. I think we're getting to, in this case, for deliver capability faster internally and extending that externally, that it is going to bear some fruit. And I'm enjoying watching Mike bring those pieces of the table together and making some decisions that are some consequential decisions that are going to have strategic impact.
What do you find most challenging about the dual nature of that? Go fast, but slow down so that you're not the only one making the decision. How do you balance the two sides of that coin? Let's go with Mike first.
I think it's important to establish a vision, right? What is the result? Not the how we're going to go get there, right? Even though I have ideas on how to get there. What is the vision? What are the outcomes? And what are we looking to go do that and communicate that? And then allow the team, right, the freedom to go figure that out. The challenges come from when we have multiple COAs, courses of action, multiple ways to go achieve that outcome. Someone eventually has to make a decision to proceed. And I think one of the challenges of leadership is, right, how long do you allow the group to storm and norm and come up with those ideas? And sometimes you have to, right, keep folks from, you have to make a decision. And then stop, balance. Let's stop relitigating. Like, let's stop coming up and questioning. Like, we all agree to this. Let's move forward. And you need to balance that with sometimes when you're trying to go fast, you may make a bad decision. And instead of sticking to a bad decision, make a new decision, right? Learn, iterate, move forward. So to me, that's a balancing act of keeping the team on track, but also allowing that innovative spirit. And then when you're wrong, pivot, right, to go achieve the result, not I was right or you were right or any of that other, right? I think that's what our current challenge is.
John, your thoughts?
Yeah, thanks, Joe. I think a big part of my ability to balance between proceeding forward in a deliberate manner, vice go fast, is really my investment on people. And specifically my subordinate supervisors, my subordinate leaders, my team members that I am supporting as they support theirs. I'm able to really take risks because I know the capability of the people that I can delegate to. And they're on a constant learning process on how to anticipate what I am good at and what I am working on, what they're good at and what they're working on, and bring all that together. They understand my intent They understand, generally speaking, how I'm going to think and what my core values are. And so I'm able to take risk and move forward quickly when I need to individually. And also, if I need to delegate down more rigor, more attention to detail, I'm able to do that as well. I've actually chosen team members that permit me to do that. I am very vision, communication focused. I'm very much an extrovert, as you well know. And I look around and I see that my subordinate managers are almost all introverts. They're almost all detail oriented, and they very much complement my weaknesses. So because of that diverse team that I have around me, I'm able to do both rigorous, detail oriented decision making, as well as stop, take a breath, make a decision, and move forward when required.
How do you balance respectfully following and learning from Mike, who obviously is a senior leader, always obviously, you know, writes your performance evaluations and all that kind of thing. But it's not just about that, right? It's keeping in line with his vision. How do you keep an eye on your own vision in light of that?
I think that my vision is directly connected and aligned with the command's vision. And it's not hard to do if the command's vision is broad enough. Generally, our conflict, the conflict between Mike and I, are about secondary and tertiary issues. It's really about approach and how something gets done. I think we are generally in alignment on the end state because we build the end state together. It's because we spend all that time on our whiteboard, on my whiteboard, which is much better equipped than his whiteboard, in my office, moving forward, developing vision. For the last few years, I think I've been able to complete Mike's sentences, generally speaking, when it comes to strategy and forward-leaning things. I think as of late, the things that we have conflict over are really our approach to things, and they're really small. No, you shouldn't say that in public because it's connected to this classified thing back here, but I really want to take credit for all of this. Well, boss, how about this? How about we take credit for this portion? I hope that scratches the itch, but I really need to keep these things behind the door, right? And those types of things are about approach, not about outcome,
if that makes sense. Just to be clear, right? The credit we're looking for is to acknowledge the great work that's being done, not to further my career, right?
I'm sorry if that's the way it came off. That was completely not what I was thinking.
So Mike, my setup for you is probably a little less controversial, I suppose, at this point because of some of the things that John said. But hey, let's just be honest. John likes independent ops. And when you can give him that space, that's wonderful. But when you're leading somebody that's highly independent and maybe even willful, he's very capable, obviously. But how do you know when to release the reins, so to speak, when you're riding that horse, and when to pull him back?
Yeah, that's like I mentioned at the very beginning, right? I like to be a certain style of leader, but sometimes I have to play a different one on TV, right? So I lead a bunch of senior command leaders, and they all don't necessarily agree on how we're going to go implement something. So perhaps I don't have a lot of friction with John from a leadership perspective on how to go implement something, but I certainly have that conflict here. And I feel the way I prefer to go deal with that is, again, to not over communicate, but very explicitly communicate the strategy, the outcome that I want to achieve, and then let them help define their roles in achieving that vision, right? Get their buy-in, have them define their roles, and then have enough check-in with them and self-reflection and assessment of their contributions to make sure we're aligned. There are challenges at the command where myself and my direct reports are not aligned. And unfortunately, we may, right? My preferred style is to have a convincing, logical argument on why I'm making this decision, or I'm going to have to go direct the decision. It's much easier to say, yes, I agree with the team's recommendation. Sometimes you have to make, well, no, I'm going to go with option 1.5. And sometimes it's going to be, I've listened to you. You've had an opportunity to provide your constructive, right? Why you disagree with my decision. But ultimately, as command leaders, you need to accept that and move on. And I feel like we could be heading to, right? These challenges are going to be difficult. The approaches that John and others are talking about, right? We're not going to agree. And at some point, we're going to need to make a decision and move forward. And that's where a lot of the leadership skills that your program helps to teach and remind people of how to go do, that's where I feel like that's those are going to come in very helpful to have deliberate conversations, critical conversations with employees and talk about, right, performance, conduct, expectations. Unfortunately, we may need to do that.
Most of the dialogues I've been having in this podcast, I end up coming around to if I was your mentee and you were my mentor, you know, what's the leadership wisdom that you might pass on? Come on, help me out here.
Yeah, I think the biggest the advice that I would give to someone like that is I got a lot of mentoring in the military as an engineer and duty officer community. It's one of our pillars. I think the thing that made me be a better person was when I had to start mentoring other people, right? So you don't have to be super senior to start mentoring. But I think that skill set to go engage with people and have those conversations, share your thoughts and wisdom with other people, makes you reflect and be better about it, on intentional on yourself. So to me, that would be the nugget that I would, right? Don't just go meet with a bunch of senior people. Go find someone to go mentor, and that would make you a better person.
The values of the Propel program are service, intentionality, and transformational leadership. How do those sit with you? What resonates about those three values?
Well, the one that resonates with me the most, right? I feel like transformational leadership has been something I think I've been trying to develop for a long time, right? That intentionalist, that intention part is the thing that resonates with me the most. About especially that being intentional, here's the result, here's the conversation I need to go have with one of my employees, and thinking through and not reacting in the moment or just walking into it unprepared. That to me has made the difficult conversations much more effective at me staying on message, me being an effective communicator and establishing boundaries and achieving the result that I want out of that without wrecking a relationship. I feel like that's the part that Propel really made me think about, as opposed to seat of my pants, sense it, right? We have too many things going on. I'm just running from meeting to meeting. That intentionalist made me change a behavior.
There's the idea of servant leadership and that being something separate from other types of leadership like autocratic or democratic or laissez-faire. I would assert that one can be a servant in every single leadership style that you use, that one can choose to serve no matter what style they're using to approach the situation. And that's my heart when it comes to what I do for the Propel program and for the warfare centers and for NAVC and the Navy.
I don't know any other approach at this stage in my life, Joe, that is something other than service. I think as you and I have been talking over the years, right, I've been on this identity search. And I think ultimately that's the core of who I am, right? I am a servant. I am most happy and most fulfilled when I am serving, when I am thinking of myself less highly than I ought to, am extending the things that I have in abundance to others. And so from that perspective, as long as I'm being of use, I am in some way fulfilled. And so from a selfish perspective, I try and approach all things as if I was a servant. And that helps me not be disruptive or be less disruptive from a caustic perspective than I would be if it was me trying to be selfish. I think I have the ability to manipulate, but really what a servant does is influence, right? It's that perspective. Who gains from this power or this energy being expended? If it's somebody other than myself, I see that as influence. If it's me gaining, I see that as manipulation. So in all things service oriented, I'm looking to, I guess, pour myself out. If I look at things from that perspective, I get filled up in a way that is much more rapid than if I was to try and generate that energy on my own. So that's how I reconcile being a servant in all things in my approach to leadership and influence. It really is about who gains from my efforts and my energy. And I hope others are gaining in a much stronger way than I am.
Thank you for joining this episode of the Fuel Podcast, brought to you by NAVC's Propel Leadership Development Program. For more information about Propel, visit the Propel Wiki page. Thanks for adding fuel to propel your journey.